thank you so much for coming down. I really appreciate it.
No, it's great to talk to you.
So, Blinded by the Light, I always feel weird giving a rundown of a movie in front of someone who was involved in the movie for fear that I might skip something that's deeply important. So I will let you describe the film.
Well, why don't we start with you describe it, and if I think you've missed something out, I'll add something to it.
It is about... amongst the deep economic concerns in the United Kingdom. See, you're
going to lose the audience immediately there,
aren't
you?
It's a coming-of-age film about a Pakistani-British teenager who falls in love with Bruce Springsteen.
That's pretty good.
Which you would think on the surface, of course, like, well, what do you see in common with Bruce Springsteen, the boss from New Jersey? And for you, at what point did it sort of click that this was the artist that was speaking to you?
Okay, so basically, you got it pretty good there. So it's 1987, it's the fall of 1987, I'm 16 years old, and up to that point, I've been really a top 40 music kid. We were just chatting off air, and you told me that you didn't think the music on the 80s...
80s is the worst music ever.
So, I mean, you're wrong, obviously. So I was really into the 80s. I was into Madonna, I was into Michael Jackson, I was into the Pet Shop Boys, I was into A-ha, you know, great stuff. But essentially... music that's kind of pointless. As in, it doesn't, it's not actually about anything. It's escapist. And so when I got introduced to Springsteen at the age of 16, suddenly I kind of felt like, my God, this guy's actually talking about real things. And I think that's what really spoke to me, because I grew up in a very working class town. My dad works in a factory. I didn't get on particularly well with him. And I had normally used music to forget about these things, but Springsteen was talking about those very things. And I think that's what connected me to him.
Well, and there was a good part of the movie, a scene where that basically said, he doesn't speak to you. He doesn't speak about things that
people
understand.
People like us. He doesn't
speak
to people like us.
And that could have meant, of course, in that context, was teenagers in high school in the United Kingdom, a Pakistani-American. So what was it about the lyrics that really spoke to you? Do you remember that one song that you first connected with?
I mean, Thunder Road, from the album Born to Run, the last line of Thunder Road is, it's a town full of losers and I'm pulling out of here to win. Now, Luton, which is where I grew up, a couple of years after I lived there, was voted the crappiest town in the country.
Nice. Congratulations. Dubious honor.
It's a dubious honor. And so when I listened to that song, I was like, I had no idea Bruce Springsteen had been to Luton. It just felt like an absolute connection. Do you know what I mean? But also, this is a guy who came from those places and had gotten out. And his dad had worked at a factory. So I just thought this was not just music that represented and reflected the life I led. It also suggested that there was a better life out there. And that was also quite inspiring to me.
Well, and you know, in a lot of ways, and part of the reason why I don't particularly like 80s music, you actually said, is it's kind of vacuous.
Yeah.
It's kind of empty. It's not to say that I don't find a Thompson Twins song to be particularly catchy, but it's just like, there's nothing there.
Yeah, although there were some other songs that were like that as well. I mean, it's hard to define an entire decade. But I think there was just something also about, particularly about America, which is, you know, I know there's a lot of people in the States, for example, who find British music really inspiring because it's quite exotic to them, you know, things like The Smiths or The Cure, because it doesn't, you know, it feels different. So growing up in Britain, having somebody talking about highways and deserts and mountains and rivers, that off end of the New Jersey Turnpike, all these things just sounded really cool as well. So there is that kind of glamour of the place that's bigger and further away. And then also this connection. So it's both a connection to the subject matter, but then something that felt really big and glamorous and different in terms of the settings of those songs.
When you ended up going to New Jersey and visiting the hometown of
on
Bruce
a pilgrimage,
Springsteen,
yeah, a pilgrimage,
did it meet the expectations?
You know, people were, the expectation that you probably have in that is, you know what, it was an absolute dump when I got there, and I'd always imagined it was going to be amazing. It wasn't. It was absolutely amazing. Yeah. I was there on the New Jersey boardwalk, on the Asbury Park boardwalk. I was there at the Stone Pony. I was there at the convention center, and as somebody for whom, you know, this stuff had meant so much to me in my mind, it was amazing to actually be there.
So the movie Blinded by the Light, it's out right now in theaters. Highly recommend it. Love it. Obviously, it's about your love affair with Bruce Springsteen and what it meant to you at that time. And I'm curious if in 1987, the economy was doing well, your father doesn't get laid off, things are not struggling the way that they were, would you have fallen in love with Bruce Springsteen in the same way?
Well, it's hard to answer that question, except that Springsteen appeals to people who weren't living in Luton in the 80s with dads who worked in factories. So if that was his only demographic, maybe that argument would work. But it seems to be a lot of people who like him who come from different backgrounds. So I think I would probably have liked him. But I do think that there is a special connection And for me, the connection is as much about class and about fathers. You know, if you come from a working class kind of ordinary mm-hmm. background, I think his music speaks specifically to that. And that doesn't matter whether it's in, you know, Seattle or in Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or in Britain. And I also think that, you know, he was somebody who really talked incredibly honestly about his relationship with his dad. And that stuff, you know, who doesn't have some kind of an issue with their parents, you know, especially if you're a teenager. So that stuff's kind of universal. So I think he would have probably spoken to me regardless.
Well, and obviously a part of this movie, we were talking about this beforehand, you know, clearly the identity side of things, the cultural differences of yeah. someone who emigrated was it directly to Luton when you were 3 years old?
Yes. Yeah.
So for the most part, that's the only thing you probably remember about
my memory begins in Britain.
Yeah. And so from that perspective, dealing with incredible bigotry in this particular city, in the UK in general, especially yeah. around that time,
yeah.
your father constantly saying, you're not British, you're Pakistani. So yeah. how do you identify?
Now, I mean, I identify as British. I mean, I kind of identified as British then, but it just felt like it was a sort of, it was harder to get that grip mm-hmm. on that identity, you know? I'm married now, I've got kids. So in that sense, I feel more locked in. I also feel that some part of it is about, you know, where do you contribute and who has given you those opportunities? So the way I look at it is everything that I am, every opportunity I've had, everything that I've ever done has been in Britain. It's because of that. And then also everything that I've created, so as a journalist, as an author, I've written a memoir called Greetings from Bury Park. That's all been about this, well, about Britain as well.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, that's who's given me the opportunities, and that's the country to which I have given everything as well. So in that sense, there is no other place for me.
Was it difficult for your family at the time and other, you know, folks who are family friends sort of taking on that identity as a Brit where, and I think the movie does a really good job of sort of not just highlighting the bigotry, but also sort of the downplaying of the bigotry that you're a family friend faced. And it was like, okay, we don't really want to admit that this is what's going on here, but it's clearly going on.
Yeah, but you know, the thing about racism and bigotry and things like that is there's a spectrum to them, you know? So there is things like somebody spitting in your face and that sort of stuff. But there's also the thing about what you're allowed to dream about, what you're allowed to aspire to. So for me, it wasn't really the direct discrimination that particularly concerned me. There was a little bit of that, you know, which is sort of mentioned in the film. It's more just what you're allowed to dream.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a 16-year-old growing up in a working-class town like Luton, you can't imagine that you'll do anything interesting with your life. You can't really imagine. You know, in the film, my character wants to be a writer. If you had met me at the age of 16, I wouldn't have said that because I couldn't have even believed it was possible to be a writer. Yeah. So that for me is interesting, is that you grow up and you think, I can't imagine being on TV. I can't imagine being on the radio. I can't imagine being a writer. I can't imagine a life that doesn't involve drudgery because I haven't seen anybody who vaguely looks like me doing anything like that. And for me, that's a slightly more pernicious and more depressing version of discrimination than the person who calls you a name on the street.
How close to the memoir is the movie?
The best answer to that is to buy the book and to read it, and then we can
which
discuss
I
it after
already did.
Well, very good.
I didn't get the book yet because I ordered it yesterday after I saw the movie.
So the book covers a lot of time. So it covers right from coming to Britain right through to my 30s. And the memoir, that's the memoir. The film just covers 2 years. And in a way, when I was thinking about the script for the film, I was just like, well, I can't do some massive kind of, you know, sprawling odyssey yeah. of a film. So let's just cut to the chase. Let's just cut to the bit, which is when I found out about Springsteen. So let's make it a rites of passage, coming of age film, 16 to 18, just before I start college, right through to Bruce, just before I go to uni. So it only covers 2 years in that time, but a lot of the backstory about the parents mm-hmm. and everything, I sort of squeezed the chronology so that you could get some sense yeah. of who they are, even in those 2 hours.
So when you do something like that, when you basically have to self-edit, right? And not only just self-edit, but it's a movie that's supposed to be the most entertaining and dramatic parts, I suppose, of a story. How do you know where to start specifically, what to keep out or what to condense or maybe even what to embellish a little bit just for the sake of film?
Well, the book came out in 2007 and is now 2019. So that takes 12 years.
Yeah.
That's what takes time. And part of it was changing the name of the character. You know,
why'd you do that?
Why did I do it? Because I found it hard to make it up. I kind of found it hard to not stick to the truth when the character was called my name.
Mm-hmm.
Because just mentally, it's just a little bit harder. So basically, I called him Javed. And the reason I'm calling him Javed is because that's my name before it was called Safraz. My mum used to call me that. And she still calls me that. If I go home, she still calls me Javed. So, but I'm not known by that to anybody else. So it's kind of a bit of an in-joke, as in it's me and it's not me. But when I called him Javed, I was able to do things. Like, for example, he's got a girlfriend in the film. I didn't have a girlfriend when I was 16. My dad would have completely slaughtered me. So that's an example. You know, there are... Javed in the film is much braver than I really was. So that's an example to answer your question about what you embellish and what you add. In truth, I would have been way too nervous. I would have been way too deferential to argue with my dad. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
If I disagreed with him, I'd have gone upstairs and written a poem about it. That's not going to make great cinema. So in the film, he confronts his dad and he has these really powerful arguments where he's really open-hearted and demands. I didn't do any of that. But that just felt more dramatic in the film. There's a scene towards the end where there's a speech that he gives in a college, and it's a really honest, heartfelt, emotional speech.
I lost it.
Did you lose it?
Oh, yeah. We were talking earlier. I'm glad my normal friend I have with me at these movies was, because I was like, don't do it.
Do you have some abnormal friends as well?
If you see a friend cry, you're pointing it out, is all I'm saying. We do that. And I was like, the tears were coming, and in a lot of ways it wasn't manipulated. Or at least I didn't feel like it was manipulated. There are movies that are good movies that they are clearly trying to get you to cry, and they're cheating
to do that.
Yes, they're cheating it to get you to cry. And yet I didn't feel like that at all during this, from the speech that you're talking about at the end to the, you know, the conversation with the editor of the school newspaper. Please just read this. I got choked up, and I think because it came off as so organic, it felt a little bit more real to me.
You know what? It was organic, but it was also honest.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. It's like, I think this is a film that's been made with love and honesty. So that speech, Gurinder Chadha, the director, she basically said to me, when you write that speech, literally just say what you think. Literally just say what you think to the world, yeah? And we'll just put it in Javed's mouth. So that was literally like how I see the world, myself now as a 48-year-old, how I see the world, and I just put it in his mouth. And so that's why it's so honest. That's why it's so raw, is because I genuinely believe every line of what's being said in that. And the other part of that is, you know, I've had a lot of people at screenings and preview screenings who come up to me afterwards and they've been in tears. And a lot of them are guys, because I think it has got a father-son kind of dynamic going on. And the interesting thing, which is not sort of in the film, but like the film finishes in 1989, and 6 years later, which is in the memoir, my dad died of a heart attack very quickly, very suddenly, without any warning. And I was only 23 years old. And that meant that I never had that kind of closure of a relationship in terms of getting to know him as a human being and talking to him about what his life was like and understanding the ways that we're connected. So in real life, I never got to do that. And that's all in the speech. So the reason I think the speech is so powerful is because that's really directly me talking to my late father and saying all the things that I couldn't really say. And you can't fake that stuff. That's not cynical. That's not engineered. Yeah. That's literally raw, honest pain and love coming through. And I think that Vivek did a really good, you know, job of sort of bringing those words to life as well. And I think the reason that the film is connecting with people, ultimately, it's because it's joyous and it is happy and it reminds people of how great it is to listen to music for the first time, you know, when you're 16 years old. But also because it's been made with so much honesty and empathy. And I think people can recognize that. I think that comes off, you know.
Well, and just the authenticity of, you know, sometimes you fall for artists regardless of the sound, but simply because of the lyrics. And there are scenes in which you literally put the lyrics up on the screen. And I was trying to think of like the artist for me, which... I'm presuming that music snobs would not like Something Corporate or Reliant K. And yet when I found them, when I was younger, it was all about the lyrics. Yes, it was catchy because at the time that genre was catchy, but I connected to the lyrics. And there was a whole generation of people my age at the time that connected simply to the lyrics. It just so happens they're just not as musically talented as, say, Bruce Springsteen.
But I think also one of the reasons we put the words up is because, you know, there are people who don't get Bruce. You know, there are people who have either never heard him, or people who can't quite work out what you're saying, you know? And so I was just like, well, if we put the words on the screen, not only does it help people, so we're not just assuming everyone knows the words to Dance in the Dark or whatever, but also because when I was 16 and I heard it, it literally felt like the music was coming alive to me. You know, it was properly speaking to me. So the idea of the words coming, it's because for him at that point, the words do feel like they are actually alive in front of him.
And it kind of it gave the movie a little bit of a music video feel.
It did.
In those parts of the scene.
A 1980s music
video. Well, yeah, well, fair enough. It was. I was also reminded at the fashion. God bless you guys.
Yeah, is that
I got to miss
that. Is that your current wardrobe?
I got to miss that.
All right.
Because, you know, again, teenager in the 90s, I had the... Which has, to be fair to the 80s, I can clearly identify the 80s. The 90s fashion kind of was just like a lack of... it was just plain,
I mean,
right?
To be honest, it was hilarious because I went on set on the beginning of April 2018 and the first day of shoot was the college scene.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these extras dressed like from 1987. They... have no idea what they're going, you know, because they weren't there. They weren't born, you know. I keep saying to Vivek and Aaron, actually, who are the two people who play, you know, two actors who play Javed and Aaron, that I've got T-shirts older than they are, which is kind of insane. And but it just looked like my childhood was being brought back to life, you know. It's absolutely extraordinary. And what's quite nice, I think, about the costumes is they're very 80s, but they don't go beyond the dial. Mm-hmm. You know, they feel authentic, but they haven't gone, it hasn't become a parody in that sense. And that's partly because the costume designers literally just said, could we have all your family photographs? You know?
Oh, wow.
And they didn't just use them. They used them and they used other magazines and other things as well. But just to sort of make it, the idea in a way was, what would a John Hughes film look like if it was filmed now and it was set in Luton?
You think that was is that the go-to? They always throw his name out as a go-to because obviously iconic from this type of film. Although this one seems clearly more complex than anything he's done.
It's more complex, but there's a bit of a Breakfast Club joke in there during one of the musical moments in terms of the dance that the three characters do. But that idea about it feeling like a big, open, warm, mainstream film, even though the characters in it aren't that, and even though obviously it's got a complexity in terms of layers that are more than, you know, a lot of those films. So in a way, we're taking a genre and then trying to play with it a bit.
When you point out how fantastic Vivek is in this movie, I also have to give a shout out to the mom who I wrote just because Mira, is it Ganatra?
Yes.
Just the look and the sort of tension, the unspoken emotions is just so good. She was so outstanding in this movie.
I mean, it's weird, actually, because I went home a couple of weeks after I saw the first time I saw it, because I go home quite a lot, and I was with my mum. And my mum's kind of in her mid-80s now. She's quite frail. She's a bit forgetful. And it was really weird talking to her, because I'm talking to her. And you get used to a certain routine when you're with elderly parents. You know, they'll ask the same question. And they're sort of there and not quite there, you know. And you have, you have a slight level of pity for them almost. You know, you're like, well, you know, I'm going to be there. I'm going to do my duty. But, you know, there's not so much you can get back from them. But having just seen the film, I was like, oh, my God, you know, you're that person. You're the person that was working till 1 a.m. You're the person that sacrificed. You're the person that came from Pakistan. And seeing her life represented on a big screen, it really kind of blew me away. I was like, oh, my God, you know, there's going to be screenings in Los Angeles and in New York and Seattle and Vegas, and people are going to get me moved by you. But you're that person. And I kind of had this newfound respect for her. So, because she's kind of like not really understanding any of this stuff. But I was just like, gosh, you know, all of this came back to you and my dad. And so it was a weird experience to see her again, having seen Mira play her.
If the movie wasn't so personal, it would not have been as good as I found it. Blinded by the Light, it's out right now. I absolutely adored this movie. I want everybody to see it. I really, really enjoy this movie. And this is not me kissing your ass, because I usually don't do those types of flowery language around people who the movies I don't like. I'm like, oh, it's out now. Probably go see it. This is actually a fan. I really, really enjoyed the film.
Well, you know, I mean, the only thing I'd say is that this is a tough time for films that don't have superheroes and, you know, aren't massive kind of, you know, creations. So in a way, you know, if we want films that aren't just those kind of films, then people have to actually turn up. Mm-hmm. They have to, you know, they have to turn up into the movie house. They've got to go up the opening weekend, because this is a film that's been made with a lot of love, and, you know, it's got a lot of heart to it. But ultimately, it works if people will turn up. So it would be great if people actually came out to see it.
Go see it this weekend, Blinded by the Light. Sofraz, thank you so much for coming by. I really appreciate it.
Great to talk to you.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.